Welcome to SCOTUSCast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUSCast, Certiorari Improvidently Granted Edition. I'm your host, Bridget Flaherty. On April 23, 2019, just 1 week after argument, the Supreme Court decided Emulex Corporation versus John Abedian, a case involving a circuit split regarding Section 14E of the Securities Exchange Act of 1934, and whether it supports an inferred private right of action based on negligence or scienter. Emulex is a computer component seller that entered into a merger agreement with Avago Technologies Wireless Manufacturing. In the merger agreement, Avago offered to pay $8 per share, which reflected a premium of 26.4% on the price of Emulex stock the day before the merger was announced. Emulex filed with the Commission a public recommendation statement supporting the tender offer, recommending that Emulex shareholders tender their shares and noting that the Emulex shareholders would receive a premium on their stock. The statement also included a summary of a fairness opinion generated by Goldman Sachs, indicating its view that the tender offer was fair to shareholders. Omitted from the recommendation statement, however, was a one-page premium analysis by Goldman, indicating that the takeover premium offered by Avago was actually below average, though within the normal range for mergers involving similar companies. The merger went forward, but thereafter, Gary John Abedian and other Emulex shareholders collectively brought suit against Emulex under Section 14E of the Securities Exchange Act, alleging that omission of the premium analysis page rendered the recommendation statement materially misleading. Emulex moved to dismiss, arguing that the facts alleged by plaintiffs did not sufficiently support the scienter required under Section 14E. The district court agreed and ruled for Emulex, but the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit reversed. Although five other federal circuit courts of appeals had interpreted Section 14E to require scienter, the Ninth Circuit reasoned that the better reading of the provision, in light of its legislative history, required merely a showing of negligence and not scienter. The Supreme Court granted certiorari to address whether Section 14E of the Securities Exchange Act of 1934 supports an inferred private right of action based on the negligent misstatement or omission made in connection with a tender offer. During oral argument, however, the justices questioned whether certiorari had properly been granted, as the courts below had not thoroughly considered whether Section 14E authorizes a private right of action at all. Indeed, just over 1 week after oral argument, the Supreme Court issued a per curiam opinion dismissing the writ of certiorari as improvidently granted. And now, to discuss the case, we have Corey Andrews, Senior Litigation Counsel at the Washington Legal Foundation.
This is an important case about the mental state that's required under the securities laws. A former shareholder of Emulex, a publicly traded company, brought a putative class action alleging violations of Section 14E of the Securities Exchange Act of 1934. Section 14E regulates a company's recommendation that its shareholders accept a tender offer, a public offer to buy shares of a public company for a set price within a set time. The complaint alleged that Emulex failed to disclose a premium analysis relied on by Emulex's financial advisor, who opined that accepting the offer was fair to Emulex's shareholders. But the district court held that Section 14E requires a showing of scienter or fraudulent intent rather than mere negligence, and so dismissed the Section 14E claim with prejudice. On appeal, the Ninth Circuit reversed, creating a circuit split over the proper mental state for Section 14E. The Ninth Circuit panel held that only negligence is required under Section 14E, because every other circuit to ever address that issue, I think five circuits in total, had held that a plaintiff must prove the defendant acted with scienter, the Supreme Court granted review to resolve that split in authority. On the merits, Emulex relied on the statutory text to argue that nothing in Section 14E supports a negligence standard. According to Emulex, the Ninth Circuit erred in inferring an unstated and previously unknown negligence standard in Section 14E. It pointed out that other statutory provisions also confirmed that Congress didn't intend to create a private right of action for mere negligence, and that scienter is the most common standard of intent under the securities laws. The petitioners emphasized the statute's purpose and history to argue that scienter is not required. According to the petitioners, by prohibiting material misstatements and omissions, the statute is not exclusively concerned with fraud, whereas here it can be shown that the company's statement omitted information so material as to make the statement misleading. Petitioners say that makes little sense to require intent. Imposing a negligence standard would best ensure that shareholders receive full and fair disclosures, and the petitioner insists that nothing requires courts to construe the securities laws as imposing the most stringent mental state. The United States, as amicus curiae, also filed a brief, which gave a little something to both sides. The Solicitor General agreed with the petitioners that Section 14E supports the negligence standard, but more importantly, perhaps, the SG agreed with Emulex that under the court's precedence, no private right of action exists in the first place. It was this latter point that came to dominate the case, both in merits briefing and at oral argument before the Supreme Court. Emulex had argued in its petition that there is no basis for inferring a private right of action under Section 14E, but Emulex had barely raised that issue before the Ninth Circuit in its rehearing petition, but instead had focused on the correct mental state. The statute is silent as to whether private parties, as opposed to the federal government, can bring an action under Section 14, and the Supreme Court has never recognized a private right of action. In fact, the Supreme Court has not inferred any private right of action where the statute does not provide for one in more than three decades. Its longstanding view is that when a court infers a private right of action from a statute that does not expressly grant one, it is usurping Congress's power to choose the enforcement regime it prefers. Now, at oral argument, while many on the court agreed that whether Section 14 creates a private right of action is an important question, at least five justices had doubts that the question was properly presented and preserved below. At the same time, many justices at oral argument also showed considerable support for finding that the required mental state should be scienter, not negligence, and many noted that the language of Section 14 is similar to other federal securities provisions that the court has found require scienter. Ultimately, though, only 8 days after the oral argument, the court dismissed the writ as improvidently granted, saying in effect that the court should not have accepted the case. As with the granting or denial of cert, this dismissal is customarily made using a simple per curiam decision without explanation. Nevertheless, it suggests that there may well be five justices prepared to hold that no private right of action exists, but then not all five believe the issue was properly before the court in Emulex. If a majority thinks no private right of action exists, they may understandably be uncomfortable opining on the mental state required for an action that they view as ultra vires. Unfortunately, the court's dismissal leaves behind a great deal of confusion about how the federal securities laws for corporate mergers and acquisitions should be enforced, and by whom. Remember, the court granted review here to resolve the circuit split over the proper mental standard under Section 14E. This leaves that split in place. The Ninth Circuit is already home to more merger-related securities actions than any other circuit. And because the venue for Section 14 claims lies in any federal district where the defendant does business, plaintiffs bringing claims under Section 14E will find it irresistible not to file in the Ninth Circuit, which now provides the country's only negligence standard for securities fraud under 14E. Finally, it remains unclear how a suitable Section 14E vehicle will ever reach the court, but I think the most likely case will have to arise in one of the few circuits that so far has not recognized the implied right of action. Those include the 1st, the 4th, the 8th, and the D.C. circuits.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.